Welcome to today's fellowship-wide webinar, a 2024 World Service Conference report and a 2025 World Service Conference Early Motions. This is presented by the General Service Board, GSB, Nominations, Procedures, and Planning Committee, also known as NOMPRO, of Debtors Anonymous. My name is Roger. I am a debtor, and I'm also the chair of the board. And I'm from the Greater Toronto area in Canada.
Hi,
Please
Roger.
join me with, thank you. Please join me with opening with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity
Need the serenity.
to accept the things we cannot change,
Cannot change.
courage to change the
Courage
things we can, and the
to
wisdom to know the difference. Great. Our call today will include nine speakers, who will be recorded for a podcast, which will be available on the debtorsanonymous.org website under Fellowship Services, and then click on Fellowship Podcasts. It'll take a few days for us to edit and get the video up. After the speakers, we will stop recording the webinar for a question and answer period. Anyone asking a question will not be recorded. There is also a Q&A option at the bottom of your screen where you can type in a question. So our first speaker today is Bliss from the GSB NOMPRO. Welcome, Bliss. And you have 5 minutes to speak, and our timekeeper will have a timer in his image on the upper left-hand side.
Awesome. Thank you, Roger. Good to be here. My name's Bliss. I'm a debtor. I'm calling from France. My solvency date is March 12, 2009. I'm going to talk about this year's 2024 report of the 2024 WSC, which was uploaded to the website a couple months ago. And I'll also talk about some of the recommendations in the process. Every year we do a report of the World Service Conference. It's uploaded to debtorsanonymous.org, Fellowship Services on the drop-down menu, and then World Service Conference. And it's at from the bottom of that page, there are reports from the very first annual meeting, which was 1982, until current day. And they get added every year. And the first report from 1982 is 3 pages. It's a fascinating read. I had to go through and read them every single report once because I was on literature committee and we were presenting a motion that was going to be controversial. So I re researched every single thing that the conference talked about. It's really interesting history in these reports. You can see th places where there was intense struggles and then places where there's just tons of wisdom in consideration when they actually record and do the minutes from the convocation, which is when delegates who are include meeting representatives, intergroup representatives, the board, and a few other people hash out what kind of motions we're going to vote on. So the report includes that those minutes, reports of all the WSC committees and the GSB committees of all the projects they're working on. Very valuable information if you want to know what's happening with DA. Issues and concerns that come from members of the fellowship for the conference to address, and the current year's motions and recommendations. On that web page, there's also a summary of every motion and recommendation from 1997 to present. This year, 2024, last year, there were 20 recommendations from 8 committees and 1 caucus. And these recommendations usually get assigned to a committee who will consider whether to do any actions related to that recommendation. And then we'll give a status report the following year. And sometimes that status report is included in the WSC report, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it just happens at the conference. So I'm going to pull out, I don't have time to read all the recommendations, but you can find them in the place where I said on the report, on the World Service Conference page in the website. But here's a few that stood out for me. There was a lot of them that were about improving the website and making it easier to access information. Business Debtors Anonymous Committee asked for all groups, if you have a new member who is identifies as a business owner, please tell them about Business Debtors Anonymous. Makes sense. Conference Committee, among their recommendations, offered suggestions how to raise funds for each meeting, so each meeting can send a delegate to the World Service Conference. Good information. The Intergroup Caucus with UUOC recommended that all meetings consider reading and possibly including the inclusivity statement in their meeting format and the service literature piece, DA Guidelines for Safety. And those two documents are at the debtorsanonymous.org website at meeting information, resources for meetings and groups. International Committee recommended with UUOC, the Underserved, Underrepresented Outreach Committee, a very detailed process to enable delegates who are currently on WFC committees to
1 minute.
thank you, Phil, to continue to serve if they can't attend the conference. This would, of course, have to go through all the approvals and conference vote, but it's a very interesting document, and so I definitely recommend reading that. I think there's some very good information in there. Literature Committee recommended creating an electronic version of the newcomers packet and have it on the website as a free download. I can tell you we're very much almost ready to launch that, but we have been working on that. Resource Development Committee recommended that a new disbursement of surplus meeting funds to include John H. Scholarship. Great idea. Technology Committee recommends a line item in the DA spending plan for a professional technology specialist. And UUOC recommends that the conference bring an early motion to change the charter to enable the possibility of a virtual world conference to provide for the participation of as many as of the 567 groups in 20 countries at 27 countries as possible. That's my time. I look forward to hearing from someone else. Thank you.
Thank you, Bliss, for your experience, strength, and hope. Our next speaker is Josie, who is the former chair of the General Service Board. Welcome to the webinar, Josie.
Thank
And
you.
you have 10 minutes to speak. And we do have a timekeeper. Would you like a 5, 2, or 1 minute warning?
Two-minute warning, please.
All right. Thank you. So over to you.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you for asking me to speak about this. It's taken me back to last year in Ottawa. It was my last conference, actually, after attending nine World Service conferences. And so I had very mixed feelings at the time, but it was fun. And it's just great to be here again and be reminded of the work that people did, the amount of work that people put in when they come to the conference. It's service beyond the group level, it's service beyond it, and it keeps DA going. It's fantastic. So I've been asked to speak a little bit about the motions that came before the conference and also to speak a bit about parliamentary procedure, which is if you haven't been to a DA World Service Conference before, the parliamentary procedure can be a little bit of a surprise. So, but first I'll talk about the motions because they have embedded in them some things which would lead on to parliamentary procedure. So, there weren't that many motions. I think there were six or seven last year. And part of the reason for that, I think, was that the board, last year and this year is getting the hang of how to administer, function with early motions. And I know that the committees will present those motions later on, but the struggle to get a motion really quickly in the 5 days was not so urgent because committees are beginning to understand, the board is beginning to understand how helpful it is to have early motions published so that the whole fellowship can talk about them in their groups. So there were only these six or seven motions. I'll go through them. The conference committee always moves to accept a bid for the next conference, and they did accept, and that was voted for, and was passed by substantial unanimity, which I'll come back to go to San Francisco. And the second one was something that the board asked the conference committee to come to bring to the conference, about a procedure to, in extreme cases, actually delist a meeting. And there's a list of very clear reasons why that might happen. It failed, and that was there was a very useful discussion about the process, and the board, I'm sure, has heard that, and the motion failed. Then those were the conference committee motions. Then the Fellowship Communications Committee brought a motion to change the name of Ways and Means to Within Our Means, and the motion failed. It failed by a very narrow margin, just under the two-thirds needed to pass. Two-thirds is what we call substantial unanimity at the conference. And the parliamentarian will count the room and calculate the number that signifies two-thirds. And I'll come back to that. So, the motion failed on that one. Their second motion they had was to recognise Founders Day. And the motion passed by general consent. That's a parliamentary word. I'll come back to it. The number three, there were four from the FCC. Because of the Founders Day, they moved to change the celebration of Promise 6 Day from April to June. June, yay, we're nearly there. So we'll have Promise 6 Day in June, which is great. I look forward to that. It passed with majority, but it was not unanimous. Motion 4 passed unanimously, and that was to change the mission statement of the FC, the Fellowship Communications Committee, to accommodate these changes that have passed. So in their mission statement, I said that. Okay, good. And then last but not least, what was then called the International Committee moved that the name of their own name be changed to the Global Committee. And that motion passed by general consent. Let me just see, someone's trying to contact you. No, it's okay. I thought it might be a member of the panel. And then the International Committee moved to amend the mission statement to accommodate that change that was voted for. So, and that was the end of the motions. Now, when you get to the conference, you get to the convocation. When you get to the convocation, there's between 100 and 130 people there. And there has to be some formal way of keeping things rational and orderly, good orderly direction. And so as chair, you have on your left, on your left-hand side, you have somebody called a parliamentarian. And as he would say, or she, the US, the DA is a US-based not-for-profit company, and the US is probably one of the few countries in the world that doesn't have a parliament. It has a Congress and a Senate, but it doesn't have a parliament. So they call meeting rules parliamentary procedure. And so what you see as a delegate is that the chair keeps whispering with this person on their left. And some people find that a bit
Two
strange.
minutes.
Thank you. Some people find that strange. My first conference, I heard parliamentary procedure, I heard Robert's rules, and I made a decision to trust it. It still feels like the right decision because it's a way of keeping things orderly. It is a fact that the discussion about motions, the wrangling over stuff really does need to happen in the committee. And there is time for discussion in the convocation, but it's limited by time constraints, a bit less so some years than others, but it can be quite limited. But trusting the procedure doesn't mean you can't question it. So the parliamentarian and the chair will be the first ones. If somebody holds a hand up and says, "Why did that not do that? Why did that go through?" You know, it's a chance to pause. If there's time, it's a chance to pause and explain and educate the people in the room as to what's happening. And that is, I believe, part of the function of the conference is to raise awareness of how this magnificent fellowship does its business. And it's extraordinary being a World Service conference. It's just big. It's just big and gaudy. It's fantastic. So the parliamentarian will explain what's going on. He'll talk about it. But that's just to say, in the big group, it's really useful for keeping order. Pass. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Josie, for your experience, strength, and hope. And our next speaker is Angela, who is a project contributor to the NAMPRO Strategic Planning Subcommittee. And her topic will be about the minority opinion. So, as part of our parliamentary rules and rules of order, what happens when we have differencing opinions? So, Angela, you have 5 minutes to speak. And would you like a 1 or 2 minute warning for your time?
1 minute, I think, and I don't know that I'm going to take up the full 5 minutes, so let's just see how we go.
Hey,
Thank
thank
you.
you.
Thank you for the wonderful introduction. Thank you to everybody who's on the call today. And thank you to everybody on the World Service Board and committees that do such an incredible job to keep our fellowship growing and to keep our fellowship relevant. My name is Angela. I am from Johannesburg, South Africa, a very grateful recovering debtor. And it really is an honor to be able to speak today in the spirit of service and devotion to the fellowship. It has continued to save me on a number of levels, especially financially, and just the surrendering into the program one step at a time. I've been asked to reflect on the principle that lies quietly at the heart of our conference process, something that may appear procedural on the surface, but is in truth deeply spiritual. The principle is the spirituality of the minority opinion. When we gather as a conference, as representatives, delegates, trustees, trusted servants, GSRs, ISRs, we do so not as individuals, but as instruments of a greater will. The traditions remind us for our group purpose, there is a loving God, or sorry, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. But what does that really truly mean? To seek and to serve in group conscience. It means that when we vote, when we speak, when we listen, we are not simply offering personal opinions. We are not here to convince, to compete, or to even win. We are here to listen for God. To act in conscience is to allow the still, small voice of spirit to move through us and to trust that someone wiser than our preferences, more loving than our logic, is shaping the way forward. In conscience, we move slowly, we pause, and we pray. We do not ask, or we ask not, do I agree, but am I being spiritually honest? Not did we win the vote, but did we make space for grace? And this is why the minority opinion is so spiritually vital. It is not an afterthought or a formality. It is a safe, sacred safeguard, because sometimes the whisper of God comes not always where the numbers lie. Sometimes the majority can move too fast. Sometimes we confuse agreement with alignment. And sometimes the presence of discomfort is the presence of discernment. And when we honor that voice, when we give it room to speak for ourselves, space to listen, we move from decision-making to spiritual listening. We remember that group conscience is not about control, it is about conscious surrender. We are not here to manage outcomes. Oh, sorry. Sorry, guys, my phone just rang. We are not here, where was I? We are not here to manage outcomes. We are here to be channels for right action, right relationship, and right timing, even when that means revisiting what we thought was already decided. To honor the minority voice is to create a fellowship that is not only spiritually democratic, but spiritually awake. And to be spiritually awake is to be humble enough to change our minds, to be led in new ways, and to soften where we were hard, to remember that higher power is always bigger than our best laid plans. And as we prepare for the August conference, with its motions, its votes, and its business, let us not forget the holiness in the process. Let us slow down long enough to hear the voice behind the words. And let us remember that we serve not to be right, but to be real, real with our God and with one another and ourselves. When we also focus on the minority opinion, if we're only focusing on the majority opinion, there's a real spiritual risk that we can mistake momentum for truth. Thank you. The minority opinion acts as a sacred checkpoint, a pause, a breath. It reminds us that conscience is not always found in the noise of agreement, but sometimes in the stillness of dissent. That one voice, that one that dares to question, to feel uneasy, to sense a ripple when others see calm, may be the very way our higher power is asking us to listen again, not to debate, not to dominate, but to discern. The minority opinion is not about ego. It is not about holding up the process. It is about honoring the process as sacred. And so I'll leave you with a little bit of a prayer from my heart to yours. Let us remember that when we serve, not to be right, but to be real with our God and with one another and with ourselves. Loving power, grant us the humility to know that your voice may speak through the few, not just the many. Grant us the willingness to hear what is not popular, the wisdom to discern what is truly needed, and the courage to allow even one voice to lead us into greater love, greater unity, and greater truth. And thanks for letting me be of service.
Thank you very much, Angela, for your experience, strength, and hope. So the next part of our webinar will be on the early motions that have been presented to the fellowship for consideration at the 2025 World Service Conference. This year, our World Service Conference will be in the San Francisco Bay Area in Burlingame, California. And we also decided to have it in the same geographical area for the year 2026. I'm going to share my screen just so you can see where to find the early motions on our website. And I will speak for about 10 minutes. So Phil, can you give me a 2-minute warning?
Certainly.
Great. So on the debtorsanonymous.org website, when you land on the homepage, if you look under Fellowship Services and go to World Service Conference, then to early motions, you will come to this page. So I'll just make this a little bit bigger. So the early motions are listed here. And so for our 39th annual World Service Conference, five early motions have been put forward. And these will be voted on by the group service representative or the intergroup service representative. But by having early motions gives the opportunity for local groups and intergroups to discuss them and to advise their representative, their thoughts on this. Now, the delegate who actually votes, relies on their own conscience at the time, and they may hear information, particularly if it's a minority opinion, that may cause them to change their mind. But the GSR and ISR, will report back to their home groups and explain how the vote went. And if they change their vote, they would give an explanation. So there are five early motions, and two come from the World Service Conference Committee. And one is to move to update current Section 6 of our WSC Charter to allow for the consideration of a virtual World Service Conference by inserting the following after the first sentence: the location may be in person or virtual. The second early motion is the Conference Committee moves to update the Conference Charter, Section 3, to lower the total number of votes necessary for a motion to pass from 3/4 to 2/3 of registered groups, and to add a third voting option of abstain in addition for for and against. So this would make the change to read: no change in Article 10 of the Charter or in the 12 Traditions of Debtors Anonymous or in the 12 Steps of Debtors Anonymous may be made with less than written consent of 2/3 of the Debtors Anonymous groups. All fellowship-wide votes will include the option to vote abstain. Our third early motion comes from the Fellowship Communications Committee. And this committee moves to change the name of the online publication, Ways and Means, to Within Our Means. And from the WSC Literature Committee, on behalf of the WSC Underserved Underrepresented Outreach Committee, there are two motions. Both relate to new concept proposals for literature. So early motion 4 is on gender identity and debt as a concept proposal. And UUOC and the Literature Committee move that the conference approve the development of a pamphlet outline on gender identity and debt, voices of gender expansive debtors. And the fifth early motion is on unhoused recovery and debt. It's a literature concept proposal. And UUOC and the Literature Committee move that the conference approve the development of a pamphlet outline on the intersections of debt and fear of being unhoused, entitled Experiences of Housing Insecurity, A Debtor's Unspoken Fear. So on the webpage, there's also background and rationale for each of these motions. It's quite a lengthy read, so I will not do that, but instead, I have invited representatives from each of the committees to share on this, and I will yield the balance of my time so they have a bit more time if needed. So I will stop my screen share here and invite Stephanie, a member of the World Service Conference Global Committee, who was also part of an ad hoc committee with the Conference Committee, to speak on motion 1. Stephanie,
Thank you.
and
Thank
you
you,
have
Roger.
5 minutes. Yeah. And would you like a 1 or 2 minute warning?
I don't think I need a warning at all. I can see the clock and so, but
Okay.
thank you. Okay, yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm Stephanie. I'm a debtor, business debtor, very grateful member of this program. And yeah, I was a member of the joint committee together with the conference committee and UUOC, and we have been looking actually at this motion since I think we spoke about it the first time in 2022. And the motion came before convocation already in 2023, and it passed in the first round, and we all thought, okay, that's it. But as we just heard, there is something like a minority opinion, which can be quite useful in this process. And it was raised, and we had to run a second vote, and the motion didn't pass. in the second round. And I just speak for me personally, I was kind of disappointed because I thought this is a great motion. Why would people not let it pass? However, what happened afterwards was that we had a really useful discussion about what was actually raised in the minority opinion and really think through this, because I think it was quite fair, the concerns that were raised. And so it got me thinking, how could this motion actually be reconsidered, but with an additional some additional thoughts on it, and really to make sure that people understand what would be the options, what would be the new opportunities if a motion like that would pass, instead of looking at what would we miss if the motion would pass. And as we just heard, the conference committee with this motion is proposing an amendment to a section of the World Service Conference Charter. And this is such a substantial document, the conference charter, that, as we found out later, by the way, it has to go through all the people who go to the conference before the conference. So even if we wouldn't have had the second round, we wouldn't have gone through with the motion, even if it had passed, because it has to go out to the fellowship before the conference so that people can discuss that, because it's a change to the conference charter. And the rationale for the motion was that, and still is, that we have witnessed that the benefits and the challenges of virtual meetings and conferences, particularly when we had the pandemic, it was quite obvious that this was actually the best solution for us to have the virtual conference. And also, we had, for the first time at the virtual conference, such a great attendance of international participants. And that was also reflected then in the next conference that came after the virtual conferences, which was held outside of North America for the first time in London, and we had a huge attendance of international participants. So, and that is the main rationale after this, that we thought, why could we not open the conference for attendees who are not able, for whatever reason, to attend a World Service Conference in person if it's held in North America, which is usually the case? I mean, we did have exceptions now, but usually it's in North America. And it's quite difficult for some people to attend. And so there is an exclusion. There's something exclusive in this World Service Conference in person so far. So we wanted to open that. Interestingly, when we had this in-depth discussion, we found out that there are a few spiritual principles actually to be found in DA that were quite aligned with the idea that we had when we came up with this motion, because we are talking a lot about, visions and abundance and everything that, what we can get if we stop debting, instead of looking of what we not have or what we cannot have and what was missing in the past. I mean, when I came up with my first spending plan, there was immediately abundance in my life, and not, looking at what I didn't have. So we began to recognize that when we were going through the spiritual principles of this program, that allowing virtual conferences would actually feed into that by looking at what would be there in addition to what we have right now. And just as a last sentence, I will just quote from the rationale that you can also go and to the website and read through it. So these passages suggest that opening the conference to virtual participation is not a deviation from tradition, but rather an expression of the spiritual abundance that guides DA members in their recovery. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Stephanie, for your experience, strength, and hope. I'll just add that our current charter requires us to have a World Service Conference in person, except in the case of force majeure. So the two pandemic years were the reason we were able to go virtual, but it does require a charter change to make it an option in non, force majeure years. Great. Our second speaker is Graham, and Graham is serving on the World Service Conference Committee. So welcome to the webinar, and Graham will speak on Motion 2. And you also have 5 minutes to speak. And how would you like your time? A 1 minute or 2 minute warning?
A 1 minute one.
Great. Thank you, Graham. Go ahead.
Thanks, Roger. Yeah, Graham, great for covering DESA. So yes, I served on the conference committee last year, and one of the areas that we wanted to discuss, in fact, I specifically joined the conference committee in order to discuss this further, and was really around whether the current fellowship-wide voting was suitable and whether or not it could potentially be amended. So, myself, I've been to the last three World Service conventions, and having seen how the fellowship-wide vote around the gender neutrality, how much time and effort was put into that by the fellowship, and to find it then did not pass, and it felt as though there was something that needed to change. So I, along with two other fellows from the conference committee, formed a subcommittee to look at the voting procedure. And I have to say it was quite a challenging topic because there were a number of we'd had a bit of feedback already about potential changes, and trying to find the right way of going about introducing a change that might be more practical, whilst at the same time ensuring that the substantial unanimity that is required is also maintained. So, like Stephanie mentioned, our motion was going to require a change to the charter, so had to be published 120 days before the conference. And we went back and forth to our own committee on several occasions with a number of draft ideas. What we have ended up with by way of an action has, I think it's fair to say, our focus really, when it came down to it, was to try and apply simplicity whilst at the same time allowing substantial unanimity principle to be maintained. So I was one that was looking at something a little bit more complex, and we spent quite a bit of time looking at ways that you could potentially lower the threshold required, but it made the wording quite clumsy and very hard to understand. So the resulting motion, which I hope does achieve simplicity in its change, and hopefully will also ensure that if we are to have further fellowship-wide votes, we have the means to pass those where the fellowship as a whole is in general agreement. And of course, it's got to be specific. So we have reduced the requirement from 75% of all registered votes to two-thirds. And we believe that this would, certainly on the figures that were used for in the last fellowship-wide vote for gender neutrality, the overwhelming majority of those registered group voted in favour for that motion. The challenge was that 18% of the groups that were registered didn't vote. And one of the things that we felt was also important in these votes was to ensure that we fully understood why groups did not
One
vote.
minute.
So, thank you. We wanted to introduce the abstention position in order that the fellowship could see exactly what the groups that were registered, what their intention was. So it's possible that you didn't vote because you chose to abstain, as opposed to simply not voting because your group, for whatever reason, didn't participate. So I think that in summary covers the objective of the motion and the wording backgrounds in the guidance, and I will leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Graham, for your experience, strength, and hope. And again, the first two motions did require a 120-day notice because there are changes to our charter. And if you look on the website, you can see the more of the rationale and backgrounders of these documents. The next three motions only required 90 days notice, but these committees were very efficient and they were able to get them in at the 120-day mark. So we were able to send everything out at the same time. So motion number three, I've invited Geraldine, who is the current chair of the Fellowship Communication Committee, to speak. And Geraldine, you have 5 minutes, and would you like a 1 or 2 minute warning?
1 minute, please. Thank you. Hi. Hi, thank you, Roger. Hi, everyone. I am Geraldine and I'm a debtor. It's very good to be here and to see you all and to speak on this motion. This was a motion that I think Josie already mentioned, or has already been mentioned, came to conference last year, and it went through, and it's quite interesting listening to you, Stephanie, about minority. No, it wasn't Stephanie on minority. It was not you. Anyway.
Angela.
Angela on minority, because this went through, then we heard the minority opinion, and then we did the vote again, and it failed by one vote. So we decided to bring it back because there was obviously an appetite for it in the fellowship. So we're moving to change the name of the online publication Ways and Means to Within Our Means. So the new title will be Within Our Means, but the masthead, if you like, of the magazine will show the full promise for context. So it will read, "We will live within our means, yet our means will not define us." As I say, we presented it in August 24 in Ottawa, and it did not pass. I'm going to read the motion, the submission that we had at FCC that was behind why we brought this forward to change the name. So the person who sent it in said, "I'd like to propose a new name for Ways and Means, changing it to Within Our Means. While the original newsletter title has historic value, most of us don't really get what it means. Also, it sounds more like a DA board newsletter addressing the financial interests of a not-for-profit organisation rather than a fellowship-wide communication resource. The new title, Within Our Means, serves two appealing purposes and presents a clearer sense of purpose. First, it supports our primary purpose, a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt one day at a time. In other words, living within our means. Secondly, it suggests how the gifts of the program, as described in the DA promises, are well within our means when we work the program. In addition, it's inclusive. Whether you under-earn, overspend, depend on creditors to get by, or live in pauperism, living within our means is a goal we all can understand, and it would help newcomers better understand the program as well." So after the vote failed by the one vote, part of the minority opinion was to do with the title of Ways and Means and where it came from. So as a committee, we went back into the history of it, and I can tell you it originated with the English Parliament and refers to the provision of revenue to meet national expenditure requirements and to implement the objectives of economic policy. So it was something that was, you know, by the original people who were founding DA, it was just something that was kind of plucked rather than it was particularly thought out in a way that represented our kind of spiritual visions about prosperity and abundance. So that's what we came up with there. I'm very excited about, I'm personally really excited about bringing this back to
One
the
minute.
conference. Thank you very much, Phil, because it was something that brought me great joy, like in my first PRGs, that I wasn't going to be defined anymore in the way I was defined when I was in debt. Like being in recovery meant that even if I had like an old cheap car, it that didn't represent me. So it removed the kind of grandiosity of status that can go, well, certainly with this recovering debtor, you know. Anyway. Yes, so we shall live within our means, yet our means will not define us. And hopefully that gives better context to the title, Within Our Means. That's what I've got. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Geraldine, for your experience, strength, and hope. And I'll just indicate that the Ways and Means previous editions are all available on the DA website. They go back to 1988, and these are free downloads. And they're available on the debtorsanonymous.org website under Fellowship Services and then DA Magazine and Newsletter. The newsletter refers to the DA Focus, which is a publication from the board, which contains things like spending plans. So again, thank you. And our next speaker will be Will. And Will is from the Underserved Underrepresented Outreach Committee. He's been the chair this year. And this is a joint motion with the Literature Committee, because anything to do with literature has to be presented through the Literature Committee. So Will will have 10 minutes, and Will, you have two motions to discuss, number 4 and 5. And how would you like your time? Would you like a 5 minute warning, 2 or 1?
Can I get 5 and 1? Is that possible? Just because
Yes.
I've thank you, Phil. Okay, so my name is Will, grateful recovering debtor and chair of the UUOC this year. The first motion that I want to talk about is a pamphlet outline on gender identity and debt and voices of the gender expansive debtors. So this motion was actually presented first at the conference this past year in August of 2024. There was considerable discussion about it, and it ended up failing by a fraction of a vote. So literally it was like half a vote or something more required, and you can't have half a vote. So it just barely failed. So we're bringing it back again this year. In the conference year 2023-2024, we held a forum of trans non-binary debtors talking about how their experience of being a member of that community had affected their debting story. And a number of issues came up, specifically the expenses around gender-affirming care, the risk or the experience of being unhoused, employment obstacles, risk of suicide and spirituality, obstacles to spirituality. There was a consensus among that group that a pamphlet like this that addressed these specific concerns would help members of this community feel seen and heard within the fellowship and welcomed. So I'm happy to answer any questions about that. I think that mostly covers it. There was some concern at the conference this past year that really the experience of being a gender expansive debtor should be reflected in all of the literature. And while I certainly agree with that, it would be fantastic, and hopefully that's a long-term goal, it's going to take many years for that to happen. And so the introduction of a pamphlet like this will help to escalate that welcome that's extended to this community. Okay, so the second pamphlet concept that we're proposing is on experiences of housing insecurity, a debtor's unspoken fear. like the gender expansive pamphlet concept, this started with a forum that we held with members of the fellowship who had experienced being unhoused in some fashion as part of their dating story. When it was suggested during the open mic at the conference this past year, many GSRs and ISRs stepped up to the UUOC to identify themselves as having experienced some fashion of being unhoused, whether that was literally living out of their car or living on the street or simply couch surfing for a period of time. And particular also what came up in the forum and with those people stepping forward was that the fear of being unhoused was a significant aspect of being a compulsive debtor for a lot of our fellows. So this pamphlet, as the gender identity one, would basically be a collection of firsthand stories sharing from members of this community, or in the case of the unhoused, members who had experienced unhousing, being unhoused in some form. And so these both would be new installments in the Voices of pamphlet series, which have explored other facets and other experiences of other communities within our fellowship. And I went really fast, so I think I've covered what I need to say. Happy to answer any questions in the Q&A portion of this talk.
Great. Thank you very much, Will, for your experience, strength, and hope. And all of our speakers, I'd like to say thank you for making the time today from around the world. We'd like to ask that DA members listening to consider making a Seventh Tradition contribution to support DA at the world level. You can donate virtually through debtorsanonymous.org/donate. One question I'll address right now is, how do individual groups discuss the early motions? So one way to do this is to incorporate it into your monthly business meetings. One group that I attend regularly in Toronto, we decided to discuss the first half of the motions in May and the second half of the motions in June. My home group in Oakville, Ontario, we decided to dedicate one entire meeting as a business meeting, and we discussed all five at the same time. And then we are sharing our results from what the group came up with from discussing this with our intergroup. And because our group is small, we are raising funds for the to send a delegate, but we're going to be joining with another group to join funds to help send that person. So when that person meets with us, we will share what our experience was on discussing these early motions. So we encourage all groups and intergroups to do so. So this recording will be available once the edit process is complete, and it will appear at on our website at debtorsanonymous.org/2024-2025-conference-year. And this will have all of the webinars as well as the fellowship-wide conference calls that have been recorded this year are all available on that link. So I'll ask our coordinator now to end the recording. Actually, what I'll do is we'll conclude with the Serenity Prayer, and then we'll end the recording. God, grant me the serenity to experience things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So we'll end the recording, and we'll enter into our question and answer period.